Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name's James Henderson, I'm chairman of the GAS programme, and today we're going to be talking again about the impact of the Russia-Ukraine war on gas markets, and we're going to be focusing quite a lot on Europe this week. We're going to talk about flows and storage and overall demand, but we're going to spend most of the podcast talking about the reaction to high prices from both the European Commission and from individual governments in Europe. And with me to do that, I've got Mike Fullwood and Jack Sharples, as usual. And I've also got Jonathan Stern, who's going to come into the conversation as we start to talk about price caps and the reaction of governments. But Jack, let me come to you first. Let's start with our usual discussion on flows. What's the new news on flows? What's happening with pipelines, for example?
Well, for the majority of European pipeline supply, no news is good news, insofar as the flow from Russia remains stable, about 75 million cubic meters per day. And so we're obviously very pleased that despite the increasingly bellicose rhetoric from the Russian government, those flows have not been curtailed. We're also seeing flows from Azerbaijan still at the full capacity of the Trans-Adriatic pipeline. Flows from North Africa, obviously the flows from Libya are pretty minimal, but at least they're stable, around 5 to 7 million cubic meters per day. In terms of the flows from North Africa, the pipeline to Spain is close to its full capacity, but there's still plenty of spare capacity on the pipeline to Italy, which is being used at about 2/3 of capacity. But clearly the issue there is Algeria's own supply-demand balance and how much they have spare. Interestingly, in the year to date, the flow from Algeria to Italy is about 0.9 BCM higher year on year. But yesterday, the CEO of Sonatrach basically publicly stated that they intended to send substantially more to Italy year on year, about 5 BCM more. So we're hoping that they have an ace up their sleeve for the fourth quarter. Now, that just leaves Norway, where the flows have obviously been impacted by maintenance this month. Initially, that very much impacted flows to the UK along the Langeled pipeline, which dropped very substantially. But over the last 10 days, we've also seen it impact the Norwegian flows to France, Belgium, Germany and the Netherlands. So the flows from Norway are about 90% of what we would hope for from full capacity. So that should be resolved really by the end of the month. So when we get to the end of September, early October, the pipeline flows should be as high as we can possibly hope for, really.
Okay, sounds reasonably positive. Mike, let me come to you, if I may, and let's talk a little bit about LNG imports. What can you tell us about LNG supply, particularly into Europe, of course?
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Jim. It's pretty much the same, seen from the same song sheet we've been doing for the last few months, is that Europe's been sucking in a lot of the LNG. It looks like in September that Europe will be slightly higher than in August, so it's a fairly consistent flow, but the EU is actually down slightly, and the UK has been importing a whole load more LNG in September. The new Eemshaven terminal seems to be up and running, but the Gate and Zeebrugge volumes are down slightly, so there's Belgium, Netherlands up a little bit, but the UK is providing the buoyancy to Europe. So it's sort of continuing on at the sort of similar increase September over September as it was for the early part of the year. So total supplies continue to go up. You have something unwinding from last year's issues and new supply coming on Calcasieu Pass. Freeport not back on yet, maybe sort of November time. If we turn to China, for example, China's still down on the previous year. In fact, if you look at the China numbers, they've almost been consistently at about 6.5 billion cubic meters a month from February onwards. Very little change month to month. And that's about 2 BCM a month less than last year. Last year's monthly average was about 25% down. To bear in mind, China, if we gloss over the COVID issue in 2018, 2021, China demand grew by about 90 billion cubic meters. China demand this year is going to be flat. So the lack of growth is what is hitting the LNG because production and part of imports are up. Briefly, the rest of the world, Latin America still down because of the high hydro. Japan, Korea, Taiwan up a bit. Southeast Asia also up a bit in terms of imports. So it's pretty much the same song we've been seeing for the whole of the summer period. Europe sucking in the imports, China flat, flattish, but way down on last year.
Okay, so I guess we keep our fingers crossed for a lack of competition from Asia for the time being. So, Jack, let me come back to you. What's the implication of that LNG import story for LNG send-out from the regas terminals? I mean, there appears to be something of a kind of capacity crunch there. But what's happening?
Yeah, so in the first 3 weeks of September, send-out at the UK plus EU terminals combined averaged 340 million cubic metres per day. That's up from August when it was around 330, but down from July when it was just under 380. So there's been a bit of fluctuation there. I think an interesting new factor is obviously, as Mike said, the launch of the Eemshaven FSRU in the Netherlands. Since the 16th of September, that has averaged 18 million cubic metres per day of send out. So that's providing at least a slight boost to supply in Northwest Europe. But I think we have pretty well hit a bit of a crunch, really. And so clearly the FSRUs in Northern Germany can't come soon enough.
Indeed. And so given all those flows, the pipelines, the LNG, what's the implication for overall supply into Europe, and what's happening with storage injections as we head towards winter?
So the story with storage remains, dare I say, cautiously optimistic, as I've said many times in these podcasts in recent months. So on the 2 days ago, we passed the landmark of having 90 BCM in European storage. So that's the UK plus EU combined. The storage injections in September have continued at a rate of around 1 BCM every 3 days up until the 19th and 20th of September, when they dipped from around 330 million cubic metres per day down close to 250. So I think what we are seeing is maybe as the weather starts to get that little bit chillier, we are likely to see the rate of storage injections drop. If we continue for the rest of September as we have been, then we could get to 93 BCM by the end of the month. I think that probably in October, the weather will be colder and the injections will slow down further. So I think if we aim at 95 BCM of storage stocks by the 1st of November, then that's a pretty reasonable target compared to overall storage capacity of about 104 BCM. So that's where we are in storage. In terms of overall European supply, in the first 3 weeks of September this year, total supply to Europe, so that's production plus imports minus storage injections, was about 700 million cubic metres per day. And that is down from 908 million cubic metres per day this time last year. But what's interesting is not only have we seen obviously the curtailment of Russian flows impacting that, but also these sustained storage injections that are taking gas off the market as well. So even in a very tight market, there's clearly still a very strong push to build storage stocks ahead of the coming winter. And I think that says everything about some of the nervousness, let's say, about the months ahead.
And that overall supply number being down, I think it's also having some impact on kind of flows within the continent. There's been some strange goings on, I think, between France particularly and some of its neighbours. Can you just talk us through that a bit?
So historically, France imported substantial volumes of pipeline gas from its near neighbours, Belgium and Germany. But what we've seen in 2022 is for those flows to first decline. And then in the case of the France-Belgium border, actually, although low-calorie gas continues to flow from Belgium to France, high-calorie gas is now flowing back from France into Belgium. So France is a net exporter in relation to Belgium. At present, the pipeline interconnection between France and Germany is a one-way connection from Germany into France. Again, France was importing substantial volumes. Those have declined during the year to date. And actually, in September, they dropped to zero. And then we've heard media reports in recent days that there are plans afoot for France to actually start exporting physically gas to Germany. So that's really quite a substantial shift in dynamic in Northwest Europe.
Okay. Well, look, thanks for that, Jack. As you say, things are getting tighter, storage injections slowing down a bit. And obviously, you've mentioned the overall supply being down. And obviously, that's had a dramatic impact on prices, well, over the past few months. And I'd now like to turn, if I can, to Jonathan, come to you, and to start to talk about the reaction of the European Commission and others to these very high prices. I mean, we've seen announcements from various governments about retail price caps, but now the EU seems to be sort of targeting the wholesale market and even questioning whether TTF is actually the right benchmark or is giving the right signals. Could you just talk us through what you're hearing and reading about that issue, just as an overview?
We are familiar with the retail price caps that have been introduced in, I think, almost every country now in Europe, never mind just the EU. So now we're talking about the possibility of capping the wholesale price, that is the price at the market hubs, and particularly TTF. And this is something that the EU has mentioned in a number of documents, but not given any detail about. And so there's been a lot of discussion from member states, but also from academics. And a lot of this discussion is quite confused in the sense that I think, and at least I also would hope, that we're not talking about a situation where suddenly Brussels says, from this date onwards, we're only going to pay you 50 euros or 100 euros or a particular figure for gas. I'm hoping that there is a situation where there will be a discussion with each of the major suppliers, and apparently there is already an EU-Norway task force discussing this, about could we agree a maximum price, how would we do that, and what would be the consequences. Then there are a number of different suggestions from academics about compartmentalizing the pipeline gas market from the LNG market, putting a cap on the pipeline gas price, and having either the TSOs or a single buyer purchasing LNG by auction and then doling it out to individual countries. But I would stress that there's a huge lack of clarity about how any of this could work or would work, and also how long any such system would take to set up.
Okay, well, let's come back to those auctions in a second. Mike, can I just come to you? This, from an overview perspective, the whole concept of TTF not sending the right price signals and, you know, not being the right price, if I can kind of paraphrase the European Commission, I mean, does that concept even work? I mean, what happens? You can't just cap a hub price. I mean, I'm guessing that this issue's arise because of the difference between the LNG price as it arrives and the TTF price. But, you know, we've talked about that in the past. Can you just explain that and just explain how even a cap might or could possibly work?
Yeah, I mean, to answer the last one, I'm not sure how a cap could work, as Jonathan alluded to. I think it's a classic case of shooting the messenger. I think in this case, the TTF price is very high, therefore we don't like it. Must be something wrong. But it is almost economics 101, the economics of congestion pricing. There's congestion in the exporting of gas from the UK to Belgium, Netherlands, the pipelines are full, and there's congestion in the regas terminals in Dunkirk, Zeebrugge and Gates, and even with Eemshaven on, there's still congestion. So in cases like that, differentials opened up between the very congested market, which is TTF, and you cannot move gas from the UK and move gas from the LNG terminals to the TTF hub because of the congestion. What happens then is you get a big discount in the markets where the gas is sort of being locked in, the UK and the LNG terminals. And if you look at the delivered LNG price to Northwest Europe, quoted by the various reporting agencies, that has been very, very similar to the JKM price, the Asian price, because the LNG price only needs to be even the same as the JKM or Asian price to attract LNG into Europe. The higher TTF is a function of the very congested constraints in that market. This has been happening for years in the US. When Marcellus came on, shale gas came on, you couldn't evacuate it out there south as you needed to. Marcellus, huge discount to Henry Hub. Same with the West Texas Permian Basin gas. Same going back many, many years to the Opal Wyoming hub, when you couldn't evacuate the gas out of the Rockies. It is a classic congestion pricing. If you look at the forward curves, then certainly NBP TTF, you see that discount going away during the winter when they expect flows on the interconnectors to be lower, because the UK may not be able to export that much gas. And I think looking further ahead very quickly, when all the German terminals come on next year, at some point, then you'd expect some of that congestion, the congestion to disappear and the discounts and the differentials to go away.
Okay, so that's interesting. So, I mean, it's serving a useful purpose. It's sending an investment message, invest in infrastructure, which is kind of now what's happening, which is okay. So the market effectively is functioning. But Jonathan, to come back to you, if I may, I mean, clearly the European Union and the member states have a problem now, which they need to resolve, or they're going to be paying out an awful lot of cash. And I think you've come up with, well, you mentioned suggestions about, you know, negotiation with suppliers, either a single buyer or using the TSOs. Can you just talk us through how you think some of those examples might work in a bit more detail?
Yes, I can. But people who are listening may be able, as we can, to think of all kinds of problems for all of them. So let me go ahead and try and do that. So what you would say to, for example, the Norwegians and potentially also other pipeline suppliers is, look, we have a major problem here of government debt, government borrowing. If we're going to continue to support all of our customer base, if we don't support our customer base, we're talking about huge hardship, particularly during the winter, and that's simply not politically tenable. So could we agree with you that we will not pay more than, to pick a number, 75 euros a megawatt hour, or a higher number, being mindful of Mike's relativity with Asian prices? And what we would then say is, we will pay you the difference in a future time, a kind of contract for difference, but moved forward into the future. And the reason for that is that if governments are having to pay tens and in the case of some large markets, perhaps as much as 100 billion euros for a year to subsidize their customers, that is not tenable from a fiscal basis. The other option, which I briefly mentioned, which has been advanced, is that basically that governments would say, we will cap the pipeline price, which of course would impact Norway very significantly, and we will then bid for the LNG that we need above that. It's actually very, very difficult to imagine that setting up a single buyer, setting up auctions, and then being able to get as much LNG at a lower price as the continent would want is a system which could be, first of all, done at all, and secondly, done in quickly enough to address the problems over the winter. But what those of us who are sceptical about any of these schemes have to engage with is governments are in a major financial problem, and so are customers, and that almost certainly something is going to happen, even if those of us familiar with the market think that that may actually be a worse solution in the end. So we really are in a very problematic situation with none of the so-called solutions being attractive.
So before I come to Mike for his economic critique of this, let me ask you also, you mentioned the TSOs, the system operators, getting involved as well. Could you just talk us through how that you see that option possibly working?
Okay, so the suggestion is that the TSOs would be mandated to provide balancing services at a predefined price or within a predefined price range. And they would not be allowed to bid for more than that for their balancing. So then, of course, that raises the question, well, what if the gas is not available at that price? And the answer to that is, or the answer in the literature is, well, if all the TSOs have a combined position, then the price will reduce to that level that they are prepared to pay. But I think many of us are not convinced that that will be the case. And as I say, setting that up would be quite a major undertaking and probably require a level of coordination that might be problematic, particularly as TSOs in different parts of Europe are in very different situations.
Okay, Mike, let me come to you then now and say, you know, we've spent 30 years liberalising the European gas market. We've now got a problem, a very big problem, in winter 22-23, which we're trying to address by going back to suppliers and asking them to reduce prices. Does this have potential longer-term implications for the European market?
Well, I think, in a sense, it is pretty much fundamentally flawed, I think, because if you take out Russia gas, because Russia aren't going to play ball with this anyway, they're not playing ball, so then very little of the EU gas market is actually contracted. If you remove Russia from the equation, on the pipeline side, you've got Azerbaijan, Algeria, Libya, and quite a bit of their gas is oil indexed anyway, so they're already at lower prices. It's only really Norway who are the sort of the spot hub indexed link pricing going in. The LNG side is very, very similar. Quite a lot of the LNG is actually contracted on oil indexed prices, and it's predominantly sort of portfolio gas and US gas, which is sort of priced in and closer to the hub prices. So you have a bit of a problem there, is that most of the gas coming into the EU, if you take Russia out, is uncontracted. So how do you deal with that? I think in terms of the longer term, I don't really see them going back to oil indexation. They've kind of made that mistake once before, and they've kind of pulled away from that. I think it will be very, very difficult to actually step into the market and say, okay, well, how do I actually contract all this gas up? Because you've got to not just deal with existing suppliers, Norway and some of the US and portfolio players. You've got to deal with this great wodge of uncontracted supply. How do you contract that up when a lot of that supply has been hedged, sold forward in the market? How would you offer them a lower price to undo all that? The only thing you can guarantee is that if you're not prepared to offer the market price, you'll get less gas. That's the only absolute guarantee that'll happen in this market.
Indeed, which raises the interesting point that Jonathan kind of alluded to, was disaggregating pipeline gas and LNG. So I guess some suppliers, LNG suppliers, have the option of taking their gas anywhere. Others are more constrained because their pipelines go from one source to one final destination. So is there an opportunity here? I mean, I know it's not an ideal one, but an opportunity here to have different negotiations with pipeline suppliers and LNG suppliers?
But your only pipeline supplier is Norway. That's the only pipeline supplier you have. If you take Russia out, some of the Algerian gas is already oil indexed, so they're getting lower prices anyway. So what discussion are you going to have with them? It is only Norway on the pipeline side you have the discussion with.
And indeed, well, the Norwegians appear to be open to some kind of discussion. So does that mean that, you know, we should look forward to, Jonathan, let me come back to you. I mean, we can look forward to some kind of negotiation with the Norwegians around the price of pipeline supply this winter?
Seems to me that the Norwegians are the most likely suppliers, certainly major suppliers, to be prepared to have a discussion on how to solve the problem from the European side. A kind of solidarity, although they're, of course, not an EU member. What I think they may agree with is some kind of contract for difference, whereby they get paid the difference between the so-called agreed maximum price and the market price as the supply-demand situation resolves in one or two or perhaps a few more years. The difficulty with that is that if you use TTF as a benchmark for the market price, and then you are comparing the maximum agreed price with the benchmark, that will, of course, affect TTF. So then the question is, well, is TTF really still a benchmark for the market price, having agreed that you will only pay a certain amount for the major pipeline supplier? So this is where things get extremely complicated. But I think the very fact that there is a task force and they are talking about, presumably, these issues is a promising sign. We still have difficulty in trying to figure out what would be a so-called fair solution for both sides.
OK, Mike, let me come back to you then on the LNG. So you've mentioned that a negotiation with LNG suppliers would be much more difficult because clearly they've got the option of all the other markets around the world. But is there a potential, do you think, for signing long-term contracts or, you know, Henry Hub-based contracts with LNG, US LNG suppliers? I mean, what are the options with LNG suppliers?
I mean, you clearly could. I mean, obviously the real surge of LNG into Europe has always been almost totally US LNG coming to Europe, both additional supply coming on and also diversions away from the Asian markets. So in terms of contracting, a lot of that, I mean, that is already effectively contracted to the off-takers, which are your traditional, some big portfolio players, some European buyers are also in that. But then the off-takers, you're not talking about negotiating with a country here, you're talking about negotiating with multiple companies. They're effectively lifting it at Henry Hub, 115% of Henry Hub, plus $3 plus the effective shipping costs to Europe, which probably amount to something like maybe sort of $12, and the market price is 50, so or 40 if it's the LNG price. So you've got to negotiate with these off-takers in terms of the price they're willing to sell at. So it's not like Norway, it's pretty much negotiating with the main company. Here you've got multiple LNG companies, portfolio players you need to negotiate with. And there may be one or two European buyers who did step up when the Sabine Pass and others came on in 2016, 2017, and are buying at Henry Hub, so they have a slight advantage. I think most of the contracts struck by European buyers was to buy at TTF or NBP or a local hub price. So they're kind of sort of locked into that a little bit. But it is a negotiation with multiple sellers. In terms of new US LNG projects, then obviously there is the opportunity to negotiate Henry Hub-related pricing with them. But then that's 3-4 years away before they come on stream. It's not going to solve this winter's problem, next winter's problem, or even the winter after. So I think it's the US is a multiple seller problem, not a single seller.
Okay. Jonathan, we're coming towards the end of the podcast. Now, let me come back to you and ask you if you can to try and kind of sum up the situation. Clearly, the European Union and other countries have a problem now, which they're trying to resolve now. What's your thought on the most likely outcome, if any, and what do you think the impact actually is on the European market for the longer term and TTF, the future of TTF?
Okay, so for me, the best outcome would be an agreement with Norway and a hope that perhaps there could be an agreement with Qatar. Mike, I think, has summarised the US situation very well, which makes it very, very difficult to imagine there could be multiple negotiations with those companies. But Qatar being a single and also a government-owned seller, So some agreement with Norway and some agreement with Qatar on a maximum price with a promise to pay more in the future. How calculated, as I mentioned before, very difficult to say. The worst outcome would be no agreement with anybody and government simply and Brussels simply saying, right, we're putting a cap on TTF. Nobody's going to pay more than a certain level, which would then do two things. First of all, I think it would be highly problematic for how much LNG, certainly, Europe would actually get. And secondly, I think it would destroy TTF as a benchmark hub. The financial implications of the forward contracts really don't bear thinking about. At the same time, where we started this conversation, the whole edifice of liberalised and competitive markets which have been built up over the past 30 years would, I think, be put at risk. Because I think once you do that, it's very, very difficult to go back when the situation, quote unquote, normalises. So the hope is that there can be some agreement with at least a couple of the major suppliers, and that the others, as Mike said, many of them supply at oil and prices, which are lower. Failing that, sudden decisions to put a cap on prices would be very, very destabilizing.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Jonathan. It's a very complex issue. You've summarized it excellently. So thanks to you, Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Jack, for your contribution earlier as well. We will be following this issue in some detail, both in our spoken research and also our written research on our website. So do keep looking there. I hope you enjoy this this podcast. Please all stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.